This is Telford Walker making a recorder of Captain Harry Loudon. Been on the High River for a number of years, and the date today is Wednesday, January the 27th, 88. This information is to be used for historical purpose in the future. And your name, give your name, Harry, and your background on some of the, when you started on the river.
Well, my name was Harry Loudon, and I started on the race down in Boone County, Kentucky, around Rabbit Hatch, if anybody remembers that. Got a job on one of the engineer's boats in 1927 at Fernbank, washing dishes. It was a funky's job, they called it cabin boy, but you had 18 men to wait on. There was beds to make, spittings to clean, the dishes to wash, the tables to set, and the floors to mop, brass to shine, and you managed to get in about 14 hours every day, you know.
Wait a minute. That's... Now you can go ahead.
Well, I worked most of that season on there, and I was working for Captain Shelby Chandler in Aurora, Indiana, and the steersman quit, got the Cub pilot, and he asked me if I'd like to have it, so naturally I jumped at that, and I stayed on that old boat 20 years, from cabin boy to, I got my license in. I served my apprenticeship, my 3 years, got my license, and when Captain Chandler went in the Cincinnati office as director of navigation, I took his place, and I was on that old boat 20 years.
What was the name of that?
Scioto.
Oh, yeah.
I was on it 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, went on to 1947, and broke up the Cincinnati district to, I don't know what they were doing, but anyhow, they were getting a lot of work caught up with, and they eliminated the Cincinnati district and put it together with Huntington and Lowell, and I was transferred to Lowell district. And I was down there, and I was in Lowell district about 18 years. And down there, I was on the Dredge Jewett, big self-propelled diesel section dredge, and different tow boats that they had. They had the Del Commune, the Cave, and trying to build a couple of new ones, Iroquois. I was on the Iroquois when I retired. Came home, they kept me busy painting and scrubbing and running around the house here. Well, I went out on the Del Commune and got me a job. And I stayed there 18 seasons.
What was your job there on the Delta Queen?
I went on the Delta Queen pilot in Pittsburgh. And then during that time, I didn't work steady, but I relieved Captain Wagner for 2 seasons on there as alternate master. The rest of the time, and I was piloting on there on the Ohio River, Pittsburgh. Anywhere between Pittsburgh and Cairo. And when I was master on there, of course, I was St. Paul and St. Louis and New Orleans and Chattanooga and Nashville and most any place.
Mm-hmm.
Made one trip up the Arkansas River, up to Little Rock, after the river was opened up. And then, other than that, of course, I have been on several tow boats. I've watched, I can remember when all the big Valley Line boats were built in 29 and 30.
What were some of those boats?
They started this, what they call the Mississippi Valley Barge Line. It was Tennessee, Ohio, Indiana, and Louisiana. And then they went from there to mostly diesel boats in, So the steamboats are going. All the steam towboats are going. The last steam towboat of any size that was built was Jason. And they built it at Marietta and so worked Union Barge Line. They used it a while and then scrapped her. Of course, all the steam packet boats, they've been going from now on. Right? There's no, they haven't been around since. Well, I guess the 1918 ice put the Louisville Cincinnati packets out of business. Well, they had a run after that, some of the smaller boats, but the two the big boats went, broke up in the ice, and then they built a new one. And come out in 25, the new Cincinnati, but the business was gone, didn't warrant anything like that, and they sold her to Strecker Steamers, excursion business over at St. Louis. And she's still running, but the steam engines are off of her, and she's working with some kind of outboard deal on her now, outboard propellers.
Hmm.
And what would have been, the packet line was going to build the city of Cincinnati and the city of Louisville. But they saw that business wasn't going to warrant both them big boats, so they sold it. What would have been the city of Louisville to Coney Island, and they made the Island Queen out of it.
Oh, I was going to ask you, whatever happened to that?
They made the Island Queen out of her, and she burned up in, I forget just exactly when, October 1947.
I can remember. We've taken trips from Cincinnati up to the island.
Well, she burned up, and the captain that was on there was first mate on her, and he helped get a lot of people there was nobody on her but the crew. She was laying there. They lost 19 people in there. Anyway.
Was that at Cincinnati or
Pittsburgh?
Oh, Pittsburgh.
And when he got down knocking down doors and getting the people out, and he got ready to get out of there, there was no place to go, so he had to jump overboard.
Hmm.
Off of the roof.
But they were they passengers or those just?
No, it was crew members.
Those crew numbers.
It was crew
that
of the day. Yeah. They wouldn't have been loading until the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, then it got fired at night, did it?
No, they blew her up. Cut a hole in her hull with a torch. Miscued, burned inside the chief engineer, burned her up.
Hmm.
They were fixing a stanchion. So the story I got, and Captain Wagner always told me, and he knew that boat so well, and he didn't even measure it. Come inside the hull where he's going to have to make a hole to repair whatever this was, see? And then
yeah.
Burnt the hole in her, she was inside the oil tank.
Huh.
And she blowed up, then burnt.
What happened to him? Did he get hurt?
Oh, he got scalded up, but he never had no scars on him. No, he jumped in the river and pretty badly burned around the arms.
Tell me about the navigation lights that they had when you first started.
Well, they were like they are now, only they were oil.
And
they were just light stands. Someone was on a tree, and then they built light stands. And they had a pretty good system of government lights, although now they're all electric, they're battery.
Yeah.
They had a few electric lights when I started. If you happened to be one near town, you know, they had some electric.
Were all the dams, first dams in 27?
No, they were finished in 29. The last, yeah, most of them were in. Up here they were, but 29 was being, or 53 was being finished, and they finished it in 29.
So,
and that had that big parade, you know, with Hoover and all that bunch.
Yeah.
I was in that deal.
So where was that? Was that down more towards Cairo? Down?
Yeah, it was about 16 miles above Cairo.
Mm-hmm. Now they tell me before they got these big dams, you had to know the river like you did your bedroom at night.
Yeah, if you was drawing lots of water like they had 9 feet. They didn't have the 9 feet until they'd done the dredging, you know.
Yeah.
They had a whole lot more than they did have before they had the dams, but they had to do a lot of dredging to maintain 9 feet. And of course, most of the toes drove 9 feet, so you had to be pretty well in it.
Occasionally they'd get lower ground, wouldn't they?
Yeah, nothing new about getting the ground.
What happened? Would the towboat be able to pull them off, or would they need help?
Sometimes he couldn't. Sometimes get some of it stuck and take everything off that's loose, and then go back to fight the rest of it. Sometimes you'd get it
they
off.
Would put
it, you had to wait till the river raised.
Would they put it on shore, or that they unloaded, or would they bring other barges up?
Oh well, sometimes like they didn't, unless it was. Of course, I was working for the government. We didn't do nothing like that, and we didn't draw that much water, so ordinarily we didn't get stuck so much. Well, they would unload the boat if it was coal or something like that. They'd unload it, but ordinarily they'd try to get it off if they could. They couldn't pull it off, well, they necessarily unload it. You know, companies would do that to save the coal. You know.
I remember one time I was on one of the passenger boats because they took on freight.
Yeah.
But they was down there right across there from Vivi someplace, I think. What is there in little towns there?
Gent's right across.
Gent, I think it's one of those places. Anyway, they tried to load some hogs. And there was four or five hogs, and they got loose from the pen and got down there in the bushes.
Oh, yeah, at time.
And the black fellas that were working on there was chasing them around the bushes. You never heard so much hollering and squealing in all your life. But finally, they got them.
I used to like to watch them load them packet landing down home where, you know, where we got Hastings Landing. They put cattle off there and pick up hogs. A lot of tobacco out of there, you know.
Do you have any idea what they got paid? Did they get, didn't get paid much besides their living?
About $1 a day.
Dollar a day?
I think that was roustabout's wages.
Uh-huh. And then I know they'd shoot crap on the boat a lot.
Yeah.
As long as they had any money.
Couldn't possibly keep that dollar. Hell no.
And
nigger,
they would throw nickels and dimes and even pennies down there, and them guys would wrestle over them and get, and then they'd shoot.
There used to be a lot of them as good dancers, you know. They could really step, and the passengers used to toss money down on the deck. The crews would really go.
And where did they live? Did they have a cabin? Slept around the boiler room?
Yeah, they'd come out every landing.
Yeah. I know at the Roar they had the chair factories would have bales of cotton that they'd carry in. Did all the towns have wharf boats then?
Well, most of them did, yeah. Rising Sun had a wharf boat. Roar and Lawrenceburg both had wharf boats. Everybody had a good wharf boat. Patriot had a wharf boat. Madison, of course, had a big one.
And
I don't think there was any wharf boats between Madison and Louisville, but in the back of the days, every town had a wharf boat.
Yeah, and I noticed most of the boats in those days always landed upstream.
Oh, yeah.
So they wouldn't come in so hard, I guess.
Well,
was that the idea?
It's a whole lot easier to land the boat upstream with the current. If the only way they'd land downstream, there wouldn't be room enough to turn around. So if there wasn't room ready to turn around, or they'd back in.
Uh-huh. Well, then
it's a whole lot easier to land head upstream with a...
Then they'd back in, so they's going upstream. Is that right?
No, I said if they was coming downstream, they always turned them around and landed head upstream, see?
Yeah.
But if like now Rising Sun, that chute was close in there sometimes that they couldn't do that. And they'd back in against it.
So they'd be coming upstream, backing up somewhere as they come in?
If you was coming upstream, you wouldn't be backing up because you had a helicopter
No, if you was going down.
Just back the headway out of it, and let her float over against the flank over, see?
Yeah.
They didn't do that very much, unless it was just a case where they couldn't turn it around, because you got so much better control of a boat with a head upstream than the current, you know, than you have with the current on your stern.
When they examined the pilot, you had to know where all the sandbars were and all such things.
You were supposed to know. He fool the inspector, right, make him think that he knew too, so you couldn't fool him much. If you put in 3 years out there, you knew what you paid attention to, what you went out there to learn. You wouldn't have no trouble getting your license. You knew how to run the river. You could either draw a picture of it when I was getting my license, or now you have to, you draw them all, you could either write it up or you could draw it up. Now, if you know the river, it's just easy to draw it. There's anything else.
Did you have to know, you had to know where the route you was running, I guess, but...
Yeah, just like you was getting license since that low, you put everything on that map that was in there, how high it was, how much water it took to kill it, how high the bars was, all the creeks, main tributaries, at least, and then all the bridges, heights, widths, and the channel spans, and all this stuff. Got lights, tell them what color there was, whether there's double lights or single lights.
Was that a different signal? What do you mean by double and single light?
Well, there were certain places they had two white lights, maybe, one above the other. That was just to keep you from getting tangled up with something else, you know.
Oh.
And like the lights around town, they'd usually be a colored light. If it's around town, it'd be a colored light, you know, either green or red. Well, now, in this new system of doing things, the lights on the... You see, a river's facing downstream with the flow of the current, that's all... That side over there is always the left side. This is always the right-hand side, the right-hand bank, whether you're coming up or going down. Of course, you reverse it in your own mind, but that's always called the...
It's always, as you're coming down, that they...
Yeah.
So you got, it's the right and left bank as you come down.
Well, these lights are all marked right bank and left bank.
In those early days, they used the whistle to signal the passing, too, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, you still do that, but you don't have to, provided you talk to him over the radio.
Uh-huh. What was that? I'm not sure. They give him one blast for what?
One blast, you pass port to port. That's on there. You pass on there. Now, if the guy's coming up the river, he's going to pass on one whistle. And he blows one whistle, and he comes up this way, and you go down that way. That's, if you're passing your port side, port to port, see?
And on his
port
side.
When you go the other way, it's starboard to starboard.
Did they always pass that way, or did they?
No,
according to the river?
The guy coming up blow the whistle, and if it didn't suit the guy coming down, he'd change it and blow what he wanted, because he had the right of way. He still has.
The one coming down the river has the right of way. Now you say they do it by phone, or do they still...
Well, we got a radio on there. You can blow if you want to. Some of them, they just sit up there and thunder on up the river, paying attention. Blow if they feel like it.
So then you don't know which side, huh?
Well, you've always talked to him on the radio.
Oh, you've already know what he's going to do.
Yeah. Things are so much different, much better out there than it used to be, right? It used to be, if you were meeting a guy in the dark night and wind was blowing, and all you had to know was a steam whistle. If he couldn't hear it, he didn't hear it, well, hell, your guess is as good as his. You managed to get by some way. But they got the flashing the light, too, you know. If you want to pass on two whistle sides, you flash the light twice.
Oh,
you do that, he answered it, well, you understood what's going on. Or one, whatever you... But you couldn't, out there of a dark night, you couldn't... Then they come along and they put a light between the stacks. I had a...
So they know where they are?
Castle, engineer's emblem, you know?
Yeah.
Between the stacks, and it had two 60-watt bulbs in it. the wire run down to the whistle pedal. He blows it twice, and then beat up twice.
Oh.
Handy as the dickens. First one I ever seen that way was the old Julius Fleshman. You remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Had a big H for Hatfield between the steps. Mm-hmm. And that line of lights in it.
Mm-hmm.
Best damn thing they ever come up with until they got a radio.
Yeah.
The way traffic had gotten and was here a few years ago, it's fell off a whole lot now. That radio is the best damn thing they ever put on it.
Did you ever have much trouble with the boaters, the small crafts, the fellas out there?
They're always a damn nuisance. Still are. Worse now because there's so many more of them.
Yeah. And there's no way you can stop, is there? How long space does it take to stop one of those?
Well, all them big towboats takes a long turn in the river. The river conditions makes it up. They wouldn't try to stop her to keep them running over them. They'd try to miss him and all that stuff. But he was coming down up around them Cincinnati bridges, about 35 feet in the river. He couldn't stop before he got to. If he stopped Anderson's Ferry, he'd be lucky.
Better keep out of the way of it. And they'd been.
You take some of these motor boaters, you know, they get full of beer and stuff. They don't. There's some smart ones out there too.
Yeah.
And there's some got a little sense. You know, like everybody else. You know. Hell, I've seen them go around that Delta Queen, them fast motor boats, and go from under the damn stage plant. Go around it, like go out of sight into the stage.
Hmm.
That stage is 60 feet long.
There's been some cases where their motor's conked out.
That's
too.
Right. And when an outboard motor conks out, he don't.
He's had it.
He don't float. He just stops, sits in the water right like that, see? But shit, you can't steer and miss him when he's had it, that's all. I've seen some of them that they should have been run over, grounded, but you don't know, hell, there might be some little kids in there or something like that. That's just like the last one, drowned at 7 up here at below old damn 35, up around Palestine. I don't know, you know where the backyard power plant is, Mickey? Up in below there is what was that. Between 36 and 35.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty close up to 35. There's a man that had a houseboat. He come out there and had his family and part of another guy's. And it was two American barge line boats hooked up together. Going up a little bit, and had 15 barges of coal. And this kid, 11 years old, his old man went down to fix a drink and left him with the boat, and steered the boat. So he seen them pretty lights going up there, so he goes out there and runs right down in front of them, drowned 7 of them. Then they're going to have a hell of a the Coast Guard actually had the hearing. They didn't find a towboat guilty or anything. But they was going to sue for millions. Of course, the hell, American Barge Line, I reckon, didn't sue a million times for that much money.
Yeah.
There's always somebody suing.
Have you heard any of the old story about the river? They used to tell down Aurora about when the boats burnt. Yeah, some of the boats had burned. I think it was I forget the name of it now. Pat Rogers.
Pat Rogers?
That's been back in the 1800s when they claimed it burnt, and some of the fellows would be out there in skiffs and things, and they was looking for loot and let the sort of the story go, and some of the people drowned, and they always told us what they called Main Shore was down around just above Lothry Club there, between there and Lothry Creek.
Yeah.
They call that Main Shores, and they always told us ghosts walked there. Well, we went down one night. We rode down there one night and stayed down there and got caught in the rain. We got wet, but we didn't see any ghosts.
No, I don't imagine they was out.
I just wonder.
Well, there's all kinds of stories you hear on the river. Some of them might be sold, some of them might be. And a lot of that stuff is, a lot of far-fetched stuff comes up out there, you know. Makes a good story.
Yeah.
You know, like some guy was talking about a boat he was on one time, and told about how big she was. All that said had brick chimneys and leather boilers. Said he carried two shoemakers and a bricklayer on a watch. Yeah. Brick chimneys would be good on a boat, wouldn't it?
That's the kind of stories they like. Like old Tom Sawyer and that's the kind of stories they used to have in those days.
Well, you know, daggone it, they... No, that river condition out there, you get a day off now for most of it. All the big companies or any amounts to anything. You work, get day for day off, they get good wages, they good good quarters, plenty to eat. Good conditions or nothing like they used to be way back. Of course, the government boats, we were always pretty good shape. But some of them old boats, they live pretty hard, I'm telling you. Mm-hmm.
How much difference is there in what they push now in the old days?
Double. Could be.
How many barges did they put in the 20s?
You can take a double locking in these small locks, in 600-foot lock chambers. If you had, anything over 10 or 12 was a double. But now, you can take 15 jumbos, these big boats, and one of these big locks like we've got now, and make it one locker.
Kidding?
Locking 15, about 11 minutes.
15 bars?
That's 22,500 tons. And a jumbo is 35 feet wide, 195 feet long, 12-foot sides. And they draw 9 feet, or... plenty of water in the river, they'll draw a little more if they can get it on there.
Uh-huh. And how?
But in the old days, now this, you get one of these 600 feet chambers, you'd have to make two lockings within 15 barges.
The locks are so much longer than they were.
Well, you got now these modern locks are 12, you got a 1200 foot lock chamber and a 600 footer. They put the small stuff through the 600 footer.
Oh, I see.
And, of course, you've got that. That's the size of all the old locks that used to be 600 feet, see?
Yeah. When do you know when that was built? It was below Aurora there. What did they call that?
38,
yeah. That was built in the 20s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Early 20s?
Yeah.
I can remember when it was built, some of the fellows that... younger fellows would be working down there as labor. And
yeah.
Now what, before that, what happened in the summertime, they couldn't run?
No, before these locks and dams were put in the river, all this old coal combine business you hear about, you know, the good old days back in, you know, that coal combine up there, there were, I don't know how many coal companies up there. There were Judy's, and Walton's, and Brown's, and O'Neill's, God knows how many. And they were towing that coal south, see, New Orleans and things.
Yeah.
But you couldn't do it. Unless you got, they could do pretty good, you know, in the wintertime and in the fall, but you had to have coal boat water. Some of them boats just laid there.
So in maybe August day, they couldn't...
long before that, they had to... And then sometimes, depend on what kind of season you had. We had a wet season. You know, them coal boats stored about 8 or 9 feet of water. And they used to live in Pittsburgh up there when there was 7 feet of glass house.
Well, what's a 7 feet of glass house?
Well, them barges, they claimed on 7 feet of water, them old boats in the real early days. The glass house was a place there at the head of Bruno Island. Was a bar and stuff in them. That was the first bar out of Pittsburgh. That was about the highest one around there, close. And if you could get over that, you might get on down there.
What? Do they call that the Glass House?
They just call it Glass House. They don't anymore. I guess it's... Well, I didn't know. I heard some of the old-timers call it that. I didn't know one. Because I wouldn't... I never run the Pittsburgh in 37.
But that was one of the lowest coming down this way.
Well, huh? That was the first bar out of Pittsburgh that they could get in trouble with. See, they kept that coal tied up in the Monongahela River.
Yeah.
And in 1985, they built the first lock down at about 5 miles below Pittsburgh at Davis Island.
Mm-hmm.
And that put water enough Pittsburgh to hold them coal freaks there, see. And of course, they struggled around, finally got them built all the way down. But them old boats used to leave Pittsburgh with... Well, I read the Vogue of the Boaz and all of that stuff, you know, about either maybe with 12, 14 coal boats and a few barges, and they load all the way down, see. Pick up at Bel Air and Moundsville and, you know, a few barges here and everywhere. See, that old combine had, no God telling how many barges, but they had about 80 towboats.
Yeah.
They had cool boats that brought the coal out of the Monongahela River down there, you know. Then they had the big ones that come on south.
Now it's down, it's they don't carry as much coal as they used to years ago, I guess.
Well, I know they might carry more. Outside, well, usually we'll just cut off and put his 15 through, and the others will come through and hook up again when they get through the dam, see?
Uh-huh.
And they go down through these pools of 30 barges. And when they get to Carroll, get through the last lock down there, well, that one boat will take them south. All of them.
Yeah, they don't have any trouble on the Mississippi?
Well, they ain't got no locks in them. Yeah,
no locks.
They got trouble, but they...
It changes a lot.
Yeah, but not as much as it used to. They got the Mississippi River pretty well harnessed. I don't know. I never was down there on it. I never worked the Mississippi River. I guess what I hear them talk about used to be pretty tough. They got them levees built now, and bends are all rocked, you know.
So it stays the same.
Yeah, it's a whole lot better than it used to be. Mm. Well, they still get into it down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, 25 barges out of St. Louis ain't nothing anymore.
Hmm.
Grain, but they bring 15 out of the upper Mississippi because that's locked and down above St. Louis all the way to St. Paul. It's locked and down, see? And they're small, they're 600-foot locks, too. They double lock them all the way out of that grain. And coal goes up there and grain comes out. All kinds of petroleum products, whatever they got, they move everything. Everything from sugar to...
One time I saw sulfur, big...
Yeah, we had.
Big barge of sulfur, and then the sun just looked like a... Shining like a...
Stole that sulfur.
It what?
A lot of them bring sulfur up the river. But you know, Carnegie Steel was one of the biggest operators up there in the Pittsburgh, that is, since the coal combine went out of business in 1916, now like coal towing, it was the Pittsburgh Coal Company. But the towing up there is all local anymore, you know. Of course, there's coal comes all the way out, but they pick up a lot of coal at Bel Air, up here at Bel Air, Ohio, right below Wheeling, it goes. You know, in coal, all these power plants, everybody had a coal mine went in business again, you know. A lot of them mines have been shut up for years. Pick up a barge here, a barge there, two or three here, two or three there. Mm. Some of them are pretty big operators, too. And they don't... there's Carnegie Steel had 15 boats. Of course, you had more than that last. They ain't got one damn boat. They don't tow a damn thing south anymore. Ingram, remember on the Tennessee River, Nashville outfit, bought them. Ingram company. Bought all them barges. 300-400 barges and all that all that stuff, and now Union Barge Line is trying to go out of business. American Barge Line, they're still running, but they quit building boats. Everybody, they built too many things. I don't, you know, that's like some of these guys trying to affect your nice tax dodge, you see.
Does the government give them any subsidy, the barge lines? Or?
Oh, yeah, they'll subsidize building new boats and things like that. Or, right. I don't know what the deal is on that or how they go about it, but these guys that had money, business was good, you know. They'd build a lot of barges. They wasn't in the river business, but they'd build a lot of barges and lease them to these companies because they could lease some barges cheaper than they could build one.
Yeah.
Leasing them for $150 a day, these big jumbos and standard barges. Business got bad, you know, here a few years ago, and they turned them goddamn barges back, got to use their own barges again. You know, they had enough of them. Shit, they took a beating, boy. Some of them, I've seen them advertising Water Ridge Journal, $15 a day you could rent one.
Huh.
$150 before. But it's picking up again out there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think
it's getting better.
There's,
but they all went hog wild and they over. It's just like Scheer now. He told coal down to Lawrenceburg, the power plant. Oh, if Scheer comes, you ever watch him put coal in there at the power plant?
Mm-hmm.
On Tanner Street?
Yeah.
Well, this EPA outfit comes along, and they bought five line haul boats, I believe, and some smaller ones over Scheer, and built 16. Towing coal to all these power plants, that's American Electrical Power. Towing to all these power plants up and down the river. Well, they found out they went too damn heavy, and they sold some of their boats and leased out some of them. They're running, but they're not all going like they. You know, some of them Jews got caught trying to beat that income tax, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah, they get kind of selfish, don't they? They try to get so much that they finally get in trouble.
Of course, anybody beats the income tax, man, I'm in favor of it, man. How does that get away with?
Not too many of them get away with. When you're piloting those, you said 25 barges out of St. Louis, how wide would they, how many barges wide?
Six widths and five lengths.
That'd be a big load, wouldn't it?
Damn right, that's a lot of stuff. Whether it's grain or water or what it is.
That runs into a few acres.
I never was into nothing that big, huh?
Well, you know, when you're piloting them things, you got to get the front end going about where you want to, and then the towboat runs around behind it.
The old boys knows what to do to it. You know, they build that thing up to a big deal. There's a lot of good pilots out there, and there's a lot of good of them walking around, never did try it, but he didn't get a chance to try it. He'd have made one if he'd got a chance.
Yeah.
It ain't nothing somebody can't do, you know. And most of our work in the government service, we didn't have that big. We had some pretty heavy big tows once in a while. Our trouble was goddamn old cabin stuff you couldn't see around. You caught all the wind in the world, you know. They're liable to land you any place, whether you wanted to or not.
Blow you into shore?
Oh, yeah, hell, them little boats didn't have power. Just let her land. That's save
would
the
wheel. Would you put it in reverse or anything?
Oh, yeah, try to save that wheel so it didn't get out on the bank. But the damn thing you can do about it when it gets too windy.
I remember one time, I think we come from Paducah, got to Evansville and was high water. Took 3 days to get past Evansville.
Hell yeah.
Back and forth across the river, just inching. Get around that bend.
Yeah.
He's over and trying to hook the shore, and finally, he get out there in the current, he take over on the other side, and then back over on this side.
Three days
going up there.
Didn't have enough power to buck the current.
Couldn't buck that current, man. That thing's swift.
Yeah, and them, you get down the lower river, them shore bars are high too. You got to have pretty good water to get in there on the banks. You know, up in here it was a little different.
course, they had, I don't know how many pieces they had, but we had a lot of pieces.
What was it, Harris? What was it, the old Harris dredge?
Yeah.
How many towboats you have hanging on there?
Two of them, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I come up with it one time with three of us hanging on it. Never run any faster.
No, I thought we never was going to get by even Bill.
She's a son of a bitch now. That dredge come up for her about, after you could get it straightened up for sure, about a mile and a half, 2 miles an hour. Thought she was doing something. Hell, if you get 2 miles an hour out of them, you're doing good.
The old steam engines didn't have as much power as these diesels, did they?
Well, they wasn't that big. These boats that we had down here, when these boats were built, 1912, 1915, see, there was a Sioux and a Miami and a Dandock built in 1912. And they were 14-6 feet. That was pretty good horsepower on a towboat in those days. For ordinary work, not for big line haul stuff. And the Ottawa and the Cayuga come out in 15, and they was 15-6 feet, a little bit more. And the Iroquois, they didn't want no too much power on her, so they built her 10-5 feet. And she told Domingo she wouldn't push nothing or something like that. But the hell, they didn't have the horsepower. Hell, they put more horsepower than that now in the lifeboat. Hell, you can hold any little old boat. Hell, 1800 twins, diesels. And hell, they've got some 10,500 horse boats on this river now. They can handle 50 barges with them. And have done it. Down on the, I don't know how many, there's several of them around. There's a KD and, Corporate Spirit up around St. Louis somewhere. I don't know who they are, but the Valley Line, they had the William J. Barter and Lillian Friedman. It was 10,500 horse, three engine jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's several others around. The Union Barge Line built two of them for their sales as a Jason and the Argonaut.
What all did they used to bring down from Pittsburgh and area that down to Cincinnati? Most of it was coal, I guess. A lot of iron, was there?
Well, yeah, that's all that moved steel. Iron, yeah. But that steel, usually, when Carnegie was towing their own product south, you know, and Jones and Laughlin done the same thing. That was back in 1927. Well, Carnegie built them two big lower river boats in 26. And that was about the old Wheeling Steel towed coal. I think to Memphis. Jones and Laughlin towed to Memphis. And the New Orleans, or the Carnegie Steel towed all the way to New Orleans. And they'd come back with scrap iron and sulfur and what have you, you know, a lot of empties. They'd take about 16. Standards those days as 175 by 26 by 11 footer. And they got to building jumbos, you know, and they'll hold 500 more tons. A jumbo will hold 500 tons more than a standard, see.
See, we had a lady talk, her father was in the brick factory there at Lawrenceburg, and she said they used to ship quite a few bricks to Cincinnati by barge, like Albee. I know, she mentioned that several big buildings that was had their bricks and it was made in Lawrenceburg and shipped them by barge. And then grain, nowadays grain's a big thing too, I guess.
Oh yeah, there's, grain ain't so big here, but there's several graineries around Cincinnati that ships out, but down in Mississippi, up in the upper Mississippi, and then in the lower Mississippi too, you've got all kinds of big grain docks, big tanks. But
some of that
25-30 barges of grain from St. Louis down, that's nothing unusual.
Can some of those be pushed out in the ocean, or do they?
No, they load them at Baton Rouge. Anyway, they load all the way through Baton Rouge and New Orleans, them docks.
Put them into steamers or
barges. They unload sometimes. some of them barges unloaded right out in the middle of the river. They go up, anchor them ships over out of the channel and load them right there, go Baton Rouge. I seen big Russian ships laying in there.
Picking up grain, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Foreign ships comes in there and takes it out. And the foreign ships will bring in iron ore, and they bring in oil from Baton Rouge. That's a big refinery, you know, bringing crude oil and take it. I've seen them go out of New Orleans, them ships drawing 36 feet. See, they got 40 feet of water to Baton Rouge in China.
How much is down in New Orleans?
Oh, shit.
Somebody told us 175 feet. Does that sound impossible?
It wouldn't be. They keep 35, 40 feet alongside the docks all the time.
Have to,
yeah.
Well, down there in Padmore, they kept a 40-foot channel down there because all them battleships and freighters and
that's
all them
right.
going through there, they all draw 32 feet.
Yes,
some
sir.
Of them draw 40 feet, almost 40 feet. Some
yeah.
of them drag the bottom. Be careful.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey, you don't, of course, he's gone now. I used to get a letter from your buddy all the time.
No.
Yeah.
No.
He died.
Yeah.
Cancer, wasn't it?
He got cancer, yeah. Yeah, he died down in Florida.
Yeah, he was in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, he went around the world. He dredged everywhere. He
was that little son of a... He's a good man, wasn't he?
Oh, he was smart, too.
Yeah, damn right he was.
Yeah.
Drove it down here on the street, little unreport.
You can come from the lakes down in Mississippi, can't you?
The lake? Well, I guess come in Chicago, not the Illinois River.
Yeah.
That's the way you'd have to come. They tow coal into Chicago from over there on the river.
From the east on up? Or?
They tow it from up the Mississippi River into Chicago.
Yeah.
Over there through that drainage canal, and just out in the lake from there.
I remember one time some of the people up there was suing so they were going to sue whoever opened the river up because the lake would get lower.
Yeah.
And God started getting rainy seasons and to come back up, and that was the end of the suit. It just been a dry season for a while, I guess. Well, what these little old packets, did they try to make money by, they didn't make them have enough passengers for that, did they?
Well, I don't know, some of the smallest ones did, but I don't know. I think the city of Louisville, city of Cincinnati, would hold about 160 passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were freighting passengers both. But I don't know, the Kentuckian, man, they went down there and got the old Hubbard, you know, after the 1918 ice cleaned out everything. They had the Kentucky running here and Hubbard. Got the Queen City along the last.
What was the city of Louisville? What was that for? Was the name of it, wasn't it a different boat?
No, not the city of Louisville, the old packet. Now you mean the ones down there now?
Yeah.
Well, that's a Belle of Louisville.
Oh, yeah, Belle.
That used to be the Avalon.
Avalon.
Uh-huh. That's it, but it's just an excursion boat.
Yeah.
See, that damn thing was built more for a ferry boat than was anything else, and they used it as a passenger, as a ferry boat and a packet, but she wasn't very big. She went to Memphis, you know, first. That's where she was built at Pittsburgh. They used to have the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati packet line, you know, they had some nice, the Queen City, and well, of course, they had a lot of sidewheel boats. Buckeye State.
Island Queen was on the side, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's side with her.
Mm-hmm.
Island Queen and City of Cincinnati. City of Louisville, Indiana was side with him. They took the old Indiana, she burnt in 1916 up here, and it pretty well burned up, and they took and rebuilt her into the American, made the excursion boat out of her.
It all got smashed.
Louisville all the time, America.
What all got smashed in the ice in the 18th?
Oh, shit, about anything that was in the river.
I know there's a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. I remember the big old Charlie Brown, the big old 200-foot towboat. She went in the ice here at Cincinnati. Both the city, Cincinnati, City, Louisville, some other stuff around there. And the Louisville packet line had the old Lucindy, too, the old cheap-ass packet they made. And you know, there was a little old whiskey boat run out of Petersburg down there.
Oh, that distillery?
Yeah.
Was that a pretty good-sized distillery?
I don't know.
I had been over there and seen the foundation of where it was. But I looked
that
like
was a Levi J. Workham.
Looked like it might have been. Petersburg must have been a lot bigger town in the past than it is now.
I'll tell you what they used to have at Petersburg. They had a damn good country ball club there. You had to beat them to beat them now.
Yeah, they were ball players. They played every Sunday. And
you had Bellevue, Petersburg, Taylorsport over here, Big Bone, Burlington, Verona.
They said during the Civil War that Petersburg and Aurora had an agreement that they'd got attacked, that they'd help each other in the case of a fight.
That would be a big help, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe they were a bigger town some years back than they are now.
Well, they might have been.
In a little place like down at Milton and stuff. They had more people around there. All those little towns would have mills and blacksmiths.
Well, hell, even, and I don't go back far enough to be an old timer, I don't reckon, but I can remember when I was a boy. Hell, any goddamn little old house had somebody living in it. Mm-hmm. Up a goddamn holler that you couldn't get there on a mule, but there's a family lived in there.
You wonder?
Log cabin.
Wonder how they got
and
up
now,
there.
Now, by God, I don't know. Shit, you could. There wasn't no road. Everything was muleback, horseback.
Either walk or road.
Rubber-tired buggies around and steel-tired mostly. Buckboards, wagons. And
oh yeah, when I was a kid, I walked back everywhere. There wasn't but 1912, when they start that first Ford, built that first car around 1911 or something like that, was the first automobile, wasn't it, that anybody ever bought?
Way back, I got out when I was just a kid, and you know,
that
was something when you seen one of them.
Yeah, I was born in 1912, and I know by the time I was 5 or 6 years old, I still didn't see very many cars. I never seen.
Shit, no.
It's like, they had a few for that, but they just kind of novelties. My dad always told a story about somebody had old Colder down there had I saw a little old, let's say a horseless buggy back in 1907. I've seen pictures of that, and somebody
about long about that time they started.
Somebody at about that time was telling that he had bumped into somebody who didn't walk fast enough across in front of him or something, and he was saying, didn't you hear me blow my horn? I guess they had one of them squeeze, you know. And the guy said, well, how in the hell did I know what honk honk meant? He had never heard anything like that before.
You know, the first damned automobile it made, Haynes gets credit for building the first automobile. Haynes Apperson at Kokomo, I believe, Indiana. And you know, the Duesenbergs, it made in Anderson, Indiana, wasn't it?
I think it
was. That was a hell of an automobile, you know.
There's quite a few different cars.
Sure, I can remember all these damn old Huckmobile. Bob Maples had an old Huckmobile. Remember that thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they had.
And shit, there was anything you could think of. Grand Page and Overland. My uncle had an Overland, and I'm telling you, everybody stand back and look at that son of a bitch. ain't that something, that Overland?
They even had Stanley steamers.
Oh, yeah.
They had pour water on them every once in a while.
They had Stanleys and Whites. They
were
two of them steam engines. I never seen either one of them.
I remember an old man had a, I forget, He didn't have a Ford. He had some kind of car, but in the wintertime he jacked it up and put it on the box, and it said, wouldn't ruin it. You want to count the tires, wouldn't let the tires sit on the ground.
Yeah, ruin it.
Put it up in the wintertime. Yeah, he wouldn't.
Well, yeah, they were hard to start. They.
Well, you know, I don't. You got tickled it down home there. Some of them farmers, well, pretty well to do. Now, Bob Ayler had a Grant 6. You ever see one?
A what?
Grant.
I've heard that name. I don't know whether I've seen that.
Bob Ayler, Hubert Ryle had a Studebaker. Had wheels up that high on it. And John Stevens had a Chevrolet, one of the first ones. Hugh Stevens had a Maxwell.
Where was that then? What
down
town?
In Boone County here, below what? Rabbit Hake, down the East Bend Bottoms. And there was somebody around there had a... Oh, God, I don't know. Well, John E. Hodges had a Ford, Model T Ford. Well, you know, it's just like television. Nobody's ever seen the television. They marveled at the thing, but then no sooner they sold you one, some son of a bitch set up shop, he could fix them. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
Never seen one. I'll bet you didn't. But the handy Jackie got in there and tinkered and probably got good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, these old automobiles, John Portwood started the garage. He didn't have enough tools. John didn't know any more about an automobile than I did. But somebody come along and selling a gas saver.
Yeah.
Put it on the carburetor. I guess gas is about 7 cents a gallon, but it's a gas saver. And John E. Hodges lived down there about a mile and a half below Rabbit Hash. And he come in there and John Portwood persuaded him, let him put one on there and try it out. John, he didn't know anything about the damn. He could keep it in the road, and that's all. And so, next Saturday, they all knew about it. The next Saturday, and everybody come into Rabbit Hash, you know, to see this. And they gathered around Johnny to see about that, what that thing done, how much gas it saved. Well, he didn't drive it 3 miles a week, you know. John said, well, I'll tell you, boys, I don't know. He said, I don't drive it too much. He said, I'll tell you one thing, I believe if anything made a ride a little easier. He had an old gravel road down there. Anything, he said, I believe it made it ride a little easier. Now, what in the hell would that thing passing on the carburetor have to do with riding?
I've always heard of the story that how Rabbit Hash got its name was during the Depression or sometime when these all didn't have no work, they'd all go out and kill rabbits, and that's why they call it Rabbit Hash. Do you ever hear anything like that?
Oh, I've heard everything about it. I don't know where it got it. The real name of that place was Carlton.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, way back then, I don't know, somebody. And you're talking about Rabbit Hash, I'd like to have some good rabbits. I ain't had a good rabbit. I used to get three nice ones, see, and Butch and his wife and kids there on that picture. On New Year's, they'd come down and after my wife died, and I'd cook black-eyed peas. You know, we're supposed to have them on New Year's. I'd have them big platter of them three nice rabbits, you know, I'd fry them nice and brown and then put them in the Dutch oven, make the gravy, and then put the gravy in all over, bubble them about 30 minutes in this Dutch oven. Make three or four pans of hot biscuits and some baked potatoes and pumpkin pie, and we'd be all right.
Yeah, you could just feed.
Yeah, they ain't done that for, ain't happened for years. Now the girls all got too big, they don't want to come see the old man anymore. Shit, if they want something, they'll be here, but, you know, well, they ain't nothing down here. They, no kids for them to play with. They live out on the hill here on off of Bridgetown Road. In 10 minutes, they can be down here.
Families don't, they not stick together like they used to. One goes one way.
They used to have that.
One the other way. And
they were like, you talk about families, about this guy that drank so bad. There was this family, and they were pretty well to do people. Big farm, big family of them. But at any rate, they all got growed up and left. Well, Joe, the youngest boy, he stayed there and run the farm for his mother. So they had to be homecoming. So they come from far and near. There were scientists and doctors and lawyers, you know, all engineers, all that pretty well-to-do people. But Joe, he got to drinking pretty bad. And his mother told one of these cousins, a brother, it was a doctor, he said, about Joe, said, I wish you'd talk to him, see if you can't do something to him about it. So he said, well. So it'd been raining, and he was out in the yard, and they had a drink of whiskey or something, and cider or something in their hand, whiskey it was. And damp, you know, summertime, old fishing worm crawling around on top of the ground. So this doctor, he done told Joe about what medical science couldn't help him any if he got drinking so bad, something got wrong with him, couldn't be able to do nothing for him. No, he gave him a hell of a good lecture, you know. Picked this old fishing worm up off the ground, put him in this glass of whiskey. The old fishing worm just straightened out, you know, dead in the quad. I said, look, Cousin Joe, he said, Brother Joe, do you get anything from that? Do you learn anything? He said, I sure do, cuz. He said, man drinks good whiskey, he'll never be bothered with stomach worms. That's what he got out of Joe.
That's the way it looked to him. Huh?
Yeah, man drink good whiskey, never be bothered with stomach worms. I saw your brother a while back. I don't, can't think how far it was. I guess it's the youngest one, ain't it?
That's Harold. That's the only one I got.
Not Harold, I guess that's his. I didn't know his name, but he knew me and we talked a while. And I knew who he was, but.
Yeah, that's Harold. He's the youngest here.
Where does he live? Yeah, one of your brothers got killed over there, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he hung himself. Accidentally hung himself.
Yeah. In a swing, wasn't it?
Yeah, on a rope. It had a loop in it. Don't know how it happened.
I know.
I found him hanging in that thing one night and I come home about 12 o'clock at night. They said they used to, him and some other boy used to play, and he had some rabbits out back in he had a rabbit house, he kept them rabbits, you know.
Yeah.
And he was out there feeding them rabbits. They said this other boy and him used to get in this thing and put that thing under the chin, you know. Then it was up the bank, and they'd swing out over that bank. And when I found him, it looked like his hand was stretched out like that. He was stiffened. Well, he'd been dead for, I guess, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
But his hands was out like that. He broke his neck. So he thought he was going to fall, but his hands was just, wasn't touching the ground. The rope wouldn't let him down. He stumbled, I guess, or done something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a damn shame. I remember that, Nicky.
Yeah, he's 15 years old.
Where's Harold lives? He live around here?
He lives up on Twain Avenue, right above Mama.
Does he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he lives upstairs over there.
Oh, well, that makes it nice.
If it wasn't for him, we'd have to put her in a home, I guess. She couldn't take care of herself. He takes care of her.
Yeah, well, that's hard things happen, don't they?
All right.